this part.
Welcome to Vodka and Juice Boxes, the playdate, where the only thing they're spilling is their secrets. So grab a cocktail, sit back, and enjoy today's confession session with your sister hosts, Amanda and Juliet.
That's me too.
You!
I just love it when that happens.
Hello!
Good afternoon, everybody. It's lunchtime.
Hello.
Welcome to the studio. Can I just say something real quick? I'm wearing Spanx for the first time in my life. My sister got them for me for my birthday, and I feel like a woman. It's
I know.
Amazing. It's like holding everything in right now.
Well, I spent quite a bit of money on nice workout pants, even though I don't work out. They're called activewear.
Oh.
I wear it when
she's
I'm actively,
very active.
Active at Target.
Yeah, I love it. I was just there,
but I bought them for the same reason. I got like one from every like different company that people were stoked on, and they're like $100 a pair, and it's stupid. It's so stupid, but they feel like
it's
a dream.
It's life changing.
They really are.
I really feel like when everything's like sucked in, you're like, I can do anything.
You know, feel better. Yes. It's very true.
It's so great. So welcome, everybody. We have a very, very special podcast topic today. We are going to be talking about alcoholism in the family. We have two very beautiful, special guests who we are not going to be giving names, but they will be sharing their stories, their journeys, where it all began and where they are today. It's very inspiring. If you guys have any questions about their story or about alcoholism in the family, please comment and they will have the opportunity to look on the Facebook and Instagram and we'll be able to respond to you guys later in the week.
We're going to try to cover as many bases as we can. They have to go to work. So we're going to be some type of a hard stop. So we might have to do a part two later on. This usually ends up happening. Juliet and I are going to try to take the back seat as much as we can so we can get as much out of them as we can. But we're going to talk about the difference between wanting alcohol, needing alcohol, social drinking. When does it become a problem? What to do when, you know, you enjoy drinking, but your spouse, you know, it could be wife or husband. It's, you know, definitely not targeted towards husbands here. It's whatever, whatever someone in the relationship seems to have an issue. And so does that mean, like, what do you do when that happens? And so, I have a lot of questions and I'm ready to learn. So.
Yep. We're going ahead and
should we do aliases so I can address them?
Do you guys want to like come up with your like dream names?
Yeah.
Oh, if you could be named.
My go-to alias is Angelina.
Angelina.
Ooh, Angelina.
Got it. Love Are you going to be Jennifer Aniston?
No, mine's Betty.
Betty!
Oh, Betty!
Perfect, perfect. Okay, Betty sounds good.
Angelina and Betty. Okay, welcome. Would you ladies go ahead and tell us, do you have children at home? You don't have to give names, obviously.
A little background.
Just ages, a little background, and then just kind of jump in.
I'll go first. So I have two little boys at home. I'm a working mom at the same time. My kids are, you know, 5 and under, so I'm kind of in the thick of it right now.
Yep.
And I am going through a divorce due to alcoholism in my family.
I am also a full-time working mom. I have a 2.5-year-old girl and another girl on the way. So I'm sitting here right now, 37 weeks pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, my God, you're so pregnant. I didn't even see her belly when
she's
she walked
freaking
in.
Tiny, whatever. You know, some people don't gain 500 pounds like I did, but, you know, it's
you
fine.
And mom gained, like,
shut up,
all of it. But you were able to lose it, and I'm still struggling.
Get
so
out
there
of
you
here.
Go.
You're the sexiest woman I know.
Not naked.
So we both have young kids, both working from home, both dealing with some interesting situations at home.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, welcome on the show. So we're going to kind of just, I guess, jump in. It's
Angelina,
out there.
Put
so
put your remote, microphone a little bit lower.
You guys both have husbands who are alcoholics. And so can you tell me, when did this all start? Like, how did you meet Angelina?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I met my husband at the gym 6 or so years ago. And, you know, he was the older guy that hadn't been married, which, you know, is always a red flag of some sort. But anyway, he was dreamy and had a pickup truck
they
and all of that.
Are.
Yeah. Awesome guy. And, you know, long story short, at the time he was a big rugby player, which is a big drinking community. So part of the fun group, part of the drinking group. I also, you know, drank and partied and we were living in the city. So it was actually, I think I was working at a bar at the time. Mm-hmm. So always around alcohol. Mm-hmm. So we met and there were a lot of occasions when we would go out together and he would be the drunkest one there and then much drunker than me, but nothing that really seemed completely, you know, out of line. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, we ended up moving to California together, road tripping after 4 months or so of dating. And then found ourselves in a situation where I had a job and he was looking for one. So that brought up, you know,
a lot of free time
for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just over the years, the drink, I noticed like a lot more drinking on his own. Like mm-hmm. when I would be at work and he mm-hmm. was looking for a job, but then that would turn into a day of drinking. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, usually a sign.
Did that bother you at the time? Like, was it,
of
or
course.
Was it, okay.
Yeah. Coming home from like a full day of work and the person's drunk, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, this, you know, this is not cool.
How was your day?
Yeah. So, you know, a few other instances like that. And then we went on though to get engaged. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I always knew in the back of my head that he had an issue with alcohol. But as it were, and I don't know if this is Betty's experience, but you think, well, once we get married, once we have kids, they'll mm-hmm. they'll chill out.
I can mm-hmm. totally see that.
They're totally going to chill out. They're going to have a job. They're going to be happy. You know, so it's going to, they're going to stop drinking mm-hmm. to the extent that they are. And then so we went on to get married and all of that, had our kid. And then when I was pregnant and not drinking at all mm-hmm. or, you know, drinking a little bit is when I was like, all right, so why aren't you slowing down? Like
right.
We're having a kid. And so that's when
panic,
the like extent of the drinking and everything really showed itself.
Okay.
And then after the baby, again, it just starts to kind of snowball. And the distance between your drinking habits is more apparent.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of denial in those first couple of years, a lot of not knowing what alcoholism was,
mm-hmm.
And just approaching it completely the wrong way now.
Can you tell me what it means to you now?
What alcoholism?
Like, how would you describe it?
Yeah, so I really thought it was something that can be controlled and stopped.
Right.
And now I really do see it as a disease for some people that are at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you have that physical addiction and you like need it to get okay. through a regular day.
Right.
Not just like, oh, I need it for social interactions, but.
Or a hard day or, mm-hmm. you know.
But like, yeah, like I need it. Like I can't. I'm looking forward to that next drink.
What is that? What does that need look like, though? Is it? I mean, would there be just bottles everywhere? Or I mean, is it in the morning taking a shot of whiskey? Like, what does that need look like in your household?
Because there's a lot of stereotypes mm-hmm. and
of like yeah. waking up and needing that something, or do they hide it, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So, kind of all the above. So, and you, what I saw is that he would try to change the kind of alcohol that he drank to make it more manageable. So mm-hmm. he would start out with these like big jugs of vodka and then would make like cocktails every night. But those cocktails would get bigger and bigger and mm-hmm. who knows how much vodka was in them.
Right.
The huge plastic cups. Mm-hmm. And then it became, oh, well, if I just drink beers, then that's better than vodka.
Slow
but then
down.
It's going through, you know, a 12 pack of beer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it was, well, I'll just have some bourbon every mm-hmm. night because that's just like a smaller amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it's more bourbon than one needs.
Right.
And they would have to drink themselves to sleep in order to be able to sleep.
Oh, okay.
And then wake up in the middle of the night with like insomnia mm-hmm. and then the cycle continues. In my situation, it ended up going into the workday, mm-hmm. which is when like, you know, you're full blown. Have a problem.
Okay.
But even before that, there's different gradations just of physical addiction to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And if there is a history of alcohol in the family, mm-hmm. it's very likely that it could be genetically predisposed.
Okay.
And like you're really dealing with alcoholism in its like full form.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, one of the signs is when as a new mom, I'm like, you need to stop. You know, you can't do this. And they really couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to try to be malicious mm-hmm. or anything. It was because they really couldn't because mm-hmm. of the addictive traits. So, you know, everyone, I'm sure, has different experiences. And that was that was mine. And then it got to the point where he had to be sober because otherwise it was just too unmanageable for mm-hmm. himself. And for me. And then so then we went down that road of sobriety and relapse, which is, a topic onto itself. But bottom line is there are usually signs mm-hmm. and you know the red flags mm-hmm. when you see it.
Mm-hmm. Which would be for you looking back?
Which would be the drinking by themselves, mm-hmm. drinking more than I know they should have been, right. having to drink to go to sleep, mm-hmm. having to drink for any social situation. Mm-hmm. Not being considerate of the kids, mm-hmm. Or if you're pregnant, not necessarily slowing. They just can't stop.
So, mm-hmm. so not being aware of your surroundings because it's revolving around yes. your needs.
Mm-hmm. It's revolving around the drink, like mm-hmm. in that situation.
So not waking up with the kids, like yeah. in the morning, if your kids are 5 years old and so on, and then you said, "Hey, I have somewhere I have." Boot camp that I paid for. It's going to cost us a lot of money. You need to wake up with the kids. And then that guy doesn't wake up. That's mm-hmm. a fucking problem. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Yeah. So there's that. There's being unreliable mm-hmm. and being hungover.
Yes, unreliable is the biggest thing.
Hungover all the time.
Right.
But then there's also they're hanging out with the kids and they're really just hey, let's go to Del Mar and get a beer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're with the family, but they're really thinking about when their next mm-hmm. drink's going to be.
Okay, mm-hmm. got it.
So it's it literally takes over their mind.
Okay.
So that's the story. And then after, it would be good to touch on how I reacted in the beginning and
right.
then how I've changed my reaction
Perfect.
To the situation.
Yeah.
I think that's important from my standpoint.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right, Betty, it's your turn. Let's hear the before and then we'll dive into where you guys
are. I just gave it 101 on yeah. alcoholism.
No, which is great. It. And and that's what we'll touch on. I mean, you're very knowledgeable about it.
I think we have to
it.
Be specific.
Yeah, because I'll just kind of flash forward a little bit because she is going to Al-Anon meetings, which I'm going to want you to touch base on as
What's
well.
That?
But this she'll touch base on for the current situation.
Okay.
But that's why she is so extremely knowledgeable. And this isn't kind of a normal thing for someone just dealing with it in the moment. So really think about what she was saying, and we'll provide some of those insights after the fact for self-care for the moms. All right, Betty, your turn.
I'm up. so my story is a little bit different. I met
make
my
sure you
ex.
Talk into the mic. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
I feel bad because ever since you guys teased me about not being able to sing happy birthday, I guess I'm a little bit shy now. That's a whole different story.
I know.
So my ex-husband and I met 18 years ago, right after college.
Wow.
I met him. And, we didn't get married until 2011. So we dated for 10 years. Some of it was long distance. I went to law school for a while, so we did the long distance thing. And throughout that time period, I never really thought of him as having a drinking problem because he was putting himself through school, working full time, doing night school. We would drink on the weekends, go out with friends to the bars, but it was never anything crazy. And then during the weekdays, we'd be making dinner and we'd have a bottle of wine. So there was never any really crazy
signs or
for me.
Issues.
And then when I got pregnant, we both wanted to have kids. So when we got pregnant, he had a job at the time, and he still has it, where he gets off at 11 o'clock on Fridays. And I started to notice the drinking was kind of picking up a little bit, but that was because after work, he would go out to pizza with his buddies, and then the drinking would just continue. And so I'd come home on a Friday before we had kids, and I used to think, okay, this is kind of getting maybe to be an issue, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a lifestyle thing that I need to maybe think about. And then when I got pregnant, you do become more hypersensitive, I think, to realizing, okay.
Even the smell.
Yeah, is he drinking more than he should be? And then he started to use some excuses with me. I feel like I just need to get it out of my system before the baby comes because it's going to be a big life changer.
And what woman wouldn't be all right.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'd
and
be
so,
supportive on that.
Yeah. I was fine with it because he was being really supportive with me during the pregnancy
mm-hmm.
and helping out
back.
All the time. And then I had my first son, and that's when things start to really just spiral with his drinking. And looking back, a lot of it he used to say, it's I can't stand the Groundhog's Day every day. I can't come home and do the exact same thing, the routine, the bedtime, the bath time, the dinner, making lunches, going to bed. And he's like, I'm just going crazy. And then he used to also blame, like, we have no sex life anymore because, you know, you're giving all your time to our son. And I'm thinking,
yeah, you smell. You're drinking all day long. You smell. Okay.
Well, he wasn't drinking all day long at the time, but it just started to be.
But it does stink.
Oh, yeah. But it was more like, okay, well, you're not giving me any me time. Like, I'm nursing the kid. I work full time. He's not sleeping through the night. And then.
Yeah.
So he started to hide the drinking at that point. And it would just be, he would put vodka in like a vitamin water bottle. Yeah. Right?
Gatorade bottles and vitamin water bottles.
Sons of bitch.
I have like,
and we thought they were hydrated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It actually does help them to like not get hungover. So that's why they do it.
And so I, at that point, started to realize, okay, this is starting to like become a problem now. And I for so long tried to think that I could fix it. So I was like, let me help you. Okay, let's come to an agreement. Okay, let's just drink. I'll let you drink 3 days a week and no more than four. You know, something like that, thinking I can help you with this. And then I started to realize like this is getting unmanageable. I reached out to his family. His family tried to talk to him about it because then he started to ruin events. We would go to events, whether it's birthday parties, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and he would just ruin them with becoming completely annihilated. And I'm like, okay, this now is becoming like a severe problem.
It's a problem. It's affecting our life.
And then
like our.
Yeah. And then I started to pull back from hanging out with my friends because I couldn't rely upon what was going to happen with him. Like, I didn't want to leave my son with him because if I left my son with him, I'd be worried the whole time. But I didn't want to have to bring him with me because then I'm like, he's going to ruin it. And now I'm having to take care of two kids, I feel like.
Oh, that's hard.
So I, for a long time, thought that I could help fix the problem. And then we ended up getting pregnant with our second. And that's when, like, things were just so out of control. And I still was kind of hiding it from a lot of people for a long time. And then I had my second. And when I had my second, he was drunk in the hospital for 4 days because I had a C-section. And he used paternity leave to just get wasted the whole time. And I just one day finally snapped. I broke down. I had to call my dad. And I was like, I need help. I don't know what to do anymore. Because you hide it from your family and your friends.
You feel totally isolated.
And it wasn't because I necessarily felt like I was embarrassed by it. But I think it was the accountability thing. I think if I knew, if I called my parents and I told my close friends, they would then make me accountable and be like, this isn't normal anymore. You need to do stuff. And I was just exhausted. I was like, I don't have the strength within me. And so that was like the big turning point. We tried the rehab. He went to rehab. He was successful for like 4 months. He relapsed. And I said, if you do it again, I'm done. And he relapsed again. And that was like our point of separation.
Okay. Wow. I know that's just.
I'm processing it all.
Those are
a lot of stories don't get to the point of like rehab, you know. So
what do you do if rehab's not a thing?
Yeah, like I mean, you would hope they would go to rehab to get the help, right? Because if they do initially have that problem, it's like if there's nothing that we can do. It sounds like in your guys' story, you're always trying to find a way to fix it, right? And so if you
through sickness and through health, so your wifely. Intuition of like, this is not your problem. It's ours. Right. It is us. It's not you. So that's what jumps in. And that's why I'm assuming you guys were like, we will fix this. So, but I remember with Brian, this is a very small thing. Like he really enjoyed smoking cigarettes. And I'd be like, I'm having a kid. You smell like, you know, like he would always say, I'm going to stop smoking when you're pregnant. And then he didn't stop. He stopped when she was one. But as a baby, I would be like, you can't touch my baby. You smell like smoke, you know? And so he goes, I don't want to quit. I love smoking. I enjoy smoking. And I really stopped nagging. And he was like, when it comes to something you enjoy, I guess some form of addiction, they have to want to stop. And he said, I am not going to follow through unless I myself am like, you know what? I gave it a good run, and that's when he stopped, not because of anything I said or shame, you know?
Because you try, I think, for so long to think, okay, I can fix this. Like, let me make
like show you we have such a good life. Like, mm-hmm. here, let's go on a trip together, right. you know, and pay for the trip.
Come and on. I'll give you another kid because that'll make this better.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I want to know is what was your guys' turning point when you're at this point where you're like, okay, I'm going to give you the best life. I'm going to, you know, work really hard. I'm going to, you know, provide for the family financially, emotionally, and all of that. And then there's that breaking moment. Like, when do you, what for both of you, what was that moment where you said, I can't do this by myself anymore? Right. Like, I'm done.
Well, when I realized he was drinking at work and like drinking in like vitamin water bottles during the day, mm-hmm. that's when I was like, holy crap, this is other level. Mm-hmm. I cannot do this and it's not manageable. But then continued to try to control the situation and threaten and go absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a pretty poised person. There were times, I mean, I was throwing myself on the floor, hyperventilating mm-hmm. as if like he was going to stop drinking because of that, which is not the case. But the turning point for my change in behavior was just at the end of last year when after a year of trying to control it, and it just truly becomes unmanageable where you are losing control of yourself. Mm-hmm. You feel crazy all the time. Mm-hmm. You become obsessed with them drinking mm-hmm. and you are losing enjoyment. Your spirit feels, you know, dampened and. You're changing your life. You're not planning certain events. You're ignoring your family. So then the best way that you find, and I think from going to Al-Anon. So Al-Anon is a support group for family members of alcoholics. So mm-hmm. it could be their father, their son, their husbands. It's all different, all walks of life, the wives, obviously, mm-hmm. All walks of life. And what the whole theory behind Al-Anon is that you can't cure it. You didn't cause it and you can't control it. So you might as well just get yourself in control because okay. that's all that you can do. And so from what I found, the only thing that does help the alcoholic actually is to stop nagging them, stop mm-hmm. scolding them, stop keeping track of them mm-hmm. and stop getting them out of ruts. And mm-hmm. I mean, I would bring my husband to urgent care. I would make mm-hmm. sure his bills were paid. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, obviously want to keep him from drinking and driving for other mm-hmm. people's sake. But and now I've just kind of stopped doing all of that. I set my boundaries.
What are your boundaries?
At this point where, you know, there's no drinking in our house around our family. And we're very much in a sober recovery mm-hmm. program. For other
people. So you don't drink around him? There's no alcohol in your house?
Oh, so that's for him. So
that's for him. Okay, this is interesting. Recovery.
I'm very pregnant now, so I haven't been right. like... But, I mean, if I wanted a glass of wine in the house, I would have it. I'm trying to, you know, be supportive. Uh-huh. But my drinking... If we went out to dinner and I had a glass of wine, that's not what triggers an alcoholic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Seeing their wife drinking it. Right. It's not that.
What do you think would be the trigger for him?
It's like everything. It's just life.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't feel guilty about having a glass of wine or a beer in front of them because that's not going to make an alcoholic drink. They'll mm-hmm. just go as soon as you go to sleep and go drink.
Right.
So, don't like torture yourself in that way.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Like, it's not like you can never drink again.
Right.
Like, my family at the holidays drank, you know, we drink wine and everything. Mm-hmm. And really, the best thing is everyone just to act like themselves. Mm-hmm. Don't tiptoe around the person.
Do you think that enables them if you tiptoe?
It just makes them, like, uncomfortable. And, it doesn't help because mm-hmm. there is nothing that anybody else can do mm-hmm. to control or to dampen their drinking.
Right.
The only thing, again, that would help is to just remove yourself and to not nag. And it's called detachment. Mm-hmm. And it's just to let them do their thing. And then because at the end of the day, they have to come to the terms mm-hmm. on their own as to whether or not they're going to stop drinking. So the alcoholic has to come to that on their own. Now, the wife can sit or the whoever can set boundaries on. If you continue to drink in this way, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to move out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a fair boundary. And then the alcoholic will have to make the decision as to what they want to do. But trying to get them to stop drinking, like, on your terms,
right?
It really is a wasted effort.
So I think for our listeners' sake, for your story, the listeners are going to wonder, okay, so he was drinking and doing all of this stuff, and then now you set boundaries and everything's great in the house.
How is it now?
What happened? Like, where was that turning point where, because now that he is sober and you guys are practicing boundaries and he's doing, you're doing your meetings and things, like, what happened to make it all click in place? Because that seems like, I mean, you're in an incredible spot right, now where right. the household is functioning. You guys are supporting each other. But what happened for just for our listeners' sake? Because they might mm-hmm. be in that certain spot.
Well, what made it click was me saying, okay, I'm done dealing with you and I'm going to deal with myself. Okay. And that seemed to turn him around to think, wow, okay, my wife means business. Mm-hmm. And she... The alcoholic kind of likes to be nagged and scolded and watched. Mm-hmm. Like, they kind of thrive off of that in a weird way. So seeing me, like completely retract and detach is, mm-hmm. like, a wake-up sign.
I like that.
And so, in that way, it's clicked. But it is one day at a time.
Right,
so
right.
you really don't know. And so I have to continue to keep my – just focus on myself, keep myself healthy and happy. Mm-hmm. So that if something does happen, I can just manage. I could figure out how I want to manage it and not be so lost and scared mm-hmm. and completely, you know, beside myself that I can't even, like, make a decision.
Do you have support?
Yes. Fortunately, yes. And I know some people do not.
Mm-hmm.
And I know early on, Betty, you felt like you did not. But I have so many friends that have alcoholic spouses mm-hmm. that we actually mm-hmm. – and, like, these were people that were already my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And right. then, like, when I moved to California, and then it just so happened half my friends, their husbands ended up, like, really having a drinking problem. And right. so we already were friends, and now we're just friends that talk about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they're a support system. Al-Anon has been a great support system. I mean, these are complete strangers, mm-hmm. but – just we just go and kind of talk about what we did for ourselves
mm-hmm.
And how we're keeping ourselves happy despite the alcoholics, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. And then now family.
So your, like, family knows
yeah.
you were able to tell them. How long did it take for you to tell your family what was going on?
Years.
OK.
So, like, Betty was, I mean, for you, it was even more. But I mean, it was 4 or 5 years of hiding it. And then okay. the day that, like, I remember when I called my dad,
because mm-hmm.
it was like, once you put it out there and everyone knows, now they're worried, now they're gonna judge. But
well, and they're not gonna let you enable anymore, maybe.
Yeah,
there's accountability there, right?
They'll hold yep. you accountable.
Yep.
And that's what's really scary.
And that's what Betty was saying,
is because yep. you don't want the outcome.
You're not
to
ready
be a broken family
mm-hmm.
you
right.
know. But But you can try to keep it together and do all these things. But at the end of the day, you know, it's you really can't even do that. You
right.
know, like, but you can't keep your family together by sheer will.
Right.
They have to. You have to be in recovery. And so, so family now is a support, and that has kept us going. And is everything.
That's great.
Yeah. So for anyone out there that feels like they're alone, oh my gosh, you're not alone at all. There's probably...
Would you recommend sharing and reaching out to your family if you know your family would be supportive? Obviously, it's situational, of course, depending on the dynamic, but...
I think the family is usually the last
okay.
the last group that people reach out to. Like, going to Al-Anon
okay.
is usually the first. Like, if
yep.
you're not even ready to tell your friends,
mm-hmm.
go to a group of strangers who are dealing with the same exact thing.
And you could literally Google Al-Anon groups Orange County, and it will pop right up. How do you spell Al-Anon? I'm like the worst spelling.
Al-Anon.
Okay. And then you'll be able to find a local group, and you don't have to share it all. You could literally go in and listen if it's an open group.
Mm-hmm.
If it's closed, then they do expect or you have to be of someone of actually, like, experiencing what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you can go, and it's totally anonymous as well, and you can just hear everyone's story. So
yeah, and it might seem like a little weird at first because mm-hmm. they're reading from the book, and
the book is the 12 steps, correct?
Yeah, so there's the 12
like the
steps, mm-hmm. and then there's, like, other books and literature that
right.
they'll, like, kind of read during the meeting, and then there'll be a time to share.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I know the first time I had gone, I didn't hear what I wanted to hear
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like, resolving my personal mm-hmm. issues. So I didn't go back
right.
for a year
okay.
until I came back around to it. Everything had become completely unmanageable, and I was ready to just go to a few meetings. And they say at least go to, like, 3 to 6 meetings, because you eventually will hear something that's helpful, and then you'll keep going
oh,
back.
Oh, that's good to
that's
know.
That's awesome.
So, Betty, did you go to Al-Anon?
No, I didn't.
You just got fed up and left.
No, I think my biggest issue was I, for so long, tried to control everything. Mm-hmm. I tried to think, okay, if I can get like a grip on this, like we can do this together. I can help you. We can make compromises. You know, we can get back on track.
What were some of your compromises that you were?
I think it's kind of what I shared earlier. Okay, we'll agree. 3 days a week, okay. You can drink. The other four, you can't, you know. And I think for so long, my biggest mistake was I just thought that I could fix this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you also sometimes think you're the problem because he kept pointing the finger and saying, mm-hmm. the reason I drink a lot of it is because you've changed and everything goes to the kid. And I'm thinking, and you get lost in it. If you don't have a support system, I literally sometimes thought I was going crazy because... Mm-hmm. He hid the alcohol from me, so, and I couldn't smell it because he purposely drank vodka, and you can't smell vodka. So then I was thinking, I'm so delirious from being exhausted from my first kid. Am I losing my mind right now? Because I know I just talked to him about this, and now he's repeating himself. And then he would say, what are you talking about? And I remember sometimes I'd reach out to some of my best friends who we all had kids around the same time, and I'm like, do you think this is postpartum depression? Like, am I losing my mind? Like, what is going on? And so you begin to lose yourself so much. Like, I wasn't the same person anymore. I pulled back from my friends. Like, it began to affect my work because the whole time at work, I was obsessed. Like, you know, our other guest was saying right now, you just feel like, okay, are they drinking? What are they doing right now? Let me send them a text message. Like, you become obsessive with trying to control them, and you literally start going crazy. Mm-hmm. You're like, this is just unreal. Like, get home, check their car, check under their car seats. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd search the closets. I'd check his, like, jacket pockets, something. This is my life. This is so unmanageable. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I was so lost that I didn't know what to do. And then, you know, when I got pregnant with my second, it was unintentional, which is totally fine. You know, I'm grateful that I have a second kid and I have no regrets with that. But then I was thinking, okay, well, I'm going to have to tough this out and hopefully he can try to fix himself, like he said, before we had the second one. And then we had the second one and it was just madness. My life was so just upside down. And so you reach out. I reached out to my family. We had to stage an intervention, like I said, for him. We did the intervention.
How did he react to that? Was
he
upset? Or?
Oh, yeah. His whole family, not his whole family, but five of his family members came down. They hired a professional interventionist. He was passed out on the sofa, hungover from the night before. And we were all sitting in the living room and he was sleeping on the sofa and it was like tap, tap.
Oh,
tap,
shit.
Tap. And he turns over and he looks like, what the fuck is this? And he knew. And at first he was pissed.
Was he mad at you?
Yeah, he was mad at all of us at first. And then thankfully the interventionist, he was really great. He convinced him to go. So he went to rehab and it really seemed to have clicked. And at that time I was like, we can do this. Like, this is great. And like, people keep in mind when you think you don't have the strength, you have to remember at that time I had a 3-year-old. He had just turned 3 the week before we did the intervention. And a 7-week-old baby.
7 weeks.
Yeah. Mm. And I had a C-section.
Good for you.
And I was like, okay, I can do this. And so he went away. You know, you think you're great. And then they come back. And then he started to just do a beer here and a beer there. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, maybe this is okay. You start making excuses again. And then bringing it back, Juliet, to your point. Like, when do you feel like you had your breaking point? Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, when they went away for rehab, you finally get a glimpse of what normal life is like. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, like, this is amazing. Like, I'm beginning to find myself again. Like, how could I have been stuck in this, like, black hole, you feel like? Wow. You know, the obsession every day. Mm-hmm. And so it was New Year's Eve 2016. And I said, next year, I'm like, I'm going places. Like, I'm going to reach out to my friends again that live here. I'm going to start making plans with them. I'm going to, like, advance in my career. Mm-hmm. And you're either coming with me or you're not. But I'm not putting up anymore with this bullshit. Mm-hmm. And he could tell that I was pretty firm. And then we went to my friend's house for a Super Bowl party who I hadn't seen, like, years. And he was wasted, like, completely wasted. And I'm like, this is it. Like, you literally reach a point, I feel like, because everyone has their weird breaking points. I mean, the stories that I could tell about the experiences that I had with him drinking, people would think, how's that not your breaking point or that? But I just woke up the next day and he even knew. I'm like, we're done. We're done. You're moving out. Like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. Like, I will figure out a way to take care of two kids, work full time. But I'm like, I can't have you anymore around. So I think that really helped. I did try to go to Al-Anon, and what's funny is I would go and I couldn't even speak. I would just cry. And it was like, they were like, oh, it's okay. And I'm like, I can't even speak. I can't even say my name right now, because you start hearing people tell their stories and you're thinking, I've been living in this black hole. I just thought my story was unique. No one else could possibly be going through this. And then you start hearing them share their stories and you're just like, I'm not crazy. He told me I was crazy for so long, but I'm like, I'm not crazy. You're the crazy one. And so I tried the Al-Anon thing. I think I maybe went three times, but I'm like, I can't even get through these without, I just cry the entire time. And I'm thinking, I've got to work. I've got to take care of two kids. So I feel like I was able to kind of find strength within myself and find myself again. And like, you know, people out there that are thinking you can't do it, I'm like, I moved out on my own with two kids.
How soon after that decision were you out that door?
He was out a month later, and then I moved out of the place a month after that. So my kids were...
So where is he now? How is he now?
He relapsed. So he moved out. He was spiraling out of control. But all I kept thinking to myself is, I at least have control of my life. I don't have to worry about coming home to him every day. He checked himself into rehab.
So he made that decision.
Yeah,
to check
he went
himself.
Into rehab and it worked great. And then he just relapsed this December because he started dating again.
How long was he sober for after the second rehab stint?
1 year and 2 months.
Wow.
Can I get a little bit nosy and personal just because I, like, you know, one of my close friends is going through something? She cannot move on because she left, right? But it's affecting her dating life because she goes, it's not him. It's not his fault. It's a disease because he's an alcoholic amongst everything else. That's just one of the problems. But she's like, you just don't understand, Amanda. It's not him. It's a disease, and you can't understand it. And it's blocking her from moving on because she says she doesn't like seeing someone else kind of play house. Like, if she dates someone long enough to meet the kid, she says she doesn't like seeing someone else in that spot because she's waiting. And she goes, she's like, it's done. The ship has sailed. But, you know, because it's blood, I am not. I don't know. Like, she swear. Obviously, it's what I want to hear is that she's not willing to go back there, but it's blocking her from moving on
because she's got that hope.
What is she waiting for with him? Is he sober?
No.
Then I think you become like, for a while I just felt like obsessive with it.
She blocked him for like 6 months or seven, eight, whatever, but like even like all communication. But as soon as he says, I'm sober, I'm ready, she goes, Amanda. She goes, I'm not going to take this away from my son. I'm like, I think you're doing it for you.
Yeah, no, I think the whole kid thing, it's, you know, I started to realize the benefits more of, you know, because I was worried about that too. You don't want the broken home. You want to have a family.
Right. Like, I do understand.
I don't want my kids, though, to be raised with an alcoholic. And it's funny, like, through sharing my story and, you know, what our other guest said, how it's funny now you start meeting friends. It's like, oh, my husband's an alcoholic too and all this stuff. And I recently met a neighbor who said she was raised by an alcoholic step-parent and her mom had stayed with him for like 30 years. And she was like, I hated having sleepovers. I never knew what it was going to bring. You know, I dreaded Friday nights. And I'm thinking, that is why I left him.
Yes.
I refused to have my kids having to ever worry about that.
Right.
So
can you share that story about how young was your oldest when he recognized signs that daddy was being different, acting different? Oh, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, that's fine. He was around like 2.5 years old.
That is young.
And started to realize, you know, we'd come home on a Friday night or whatever, or even a Saturday, and he could just tell that my ex was acting different. So my son used to grab my hand and say, "Mommy, let's go play in my room and close the door."
Oh, no, that makes me want to cry.
And so that was a turning point. And I'm like, okay, if it's beginning to affect him to where now he is wanting to pull away from him.
He doesn't want dad. Right.
No.
Because dad's not safe anymore.
Situations that are better without the dad if they're drinking, still actively drinking. I mean, no doubt. I think we all have friends that had alcoholic fathers and will just tell you it, you know, it affected their whole lives. So there's those boundaries you have to set as the mother, mama bear. You cannot be around the kids when you're drunk, and just regulating that is exhausting.
It's so exhausting. But the mama bear, when it does come out, it's like, I think oftentimes that could be a real changing point, because that was it for me. Like, I could take a lot of the shit from him, and, you know, the emotional abuse and everything like that, like, you suck and all this stuff, you know, you're not a great wife anymore, blah blah blah. I could take that, but I'm like, once it starts to affect our kids, at that point I'm like, okay, no, my job is mama bear. I have to protect these children. So if I'm seeing now that it's beginning to affect the children, then no, like, no more. And so now it's interesting. So even just like,
is he in their life?
Yeah. Okay. He still is in their life.
No, that's good. That's a great question.
But, you know, it's, again, me having to manage, like, a lot of it.
Well, because you just said he relapsed, though, right? So what?
So does he allow to drive with him?
Yeah,
what's going on? Is it supervised visits? What is it?
No, so we're still going through the courts. But, I mean, I think he at least, you know, knows kind of not to fuck with me on that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, no, you're not taking them on trips. You're not doing any of this. Like, you've revoked everything. And so... But I think even though, like, last night, like, it was just me and the two boys, and it was, like, a great reflection of, okay, I made the right decision in my life. Like, I got home with them. You know, I picked them both up from school. I made them dinner. I let them watch a show while I was cooking. We all sat down. We ate pasta together.
Oh,
we
so were it's like, together. Together.
He wasn't there last night.
This is just mom and her life.
Her current life. How it is now. And then I was like, okay, let's do bath time. There was no screaming. Everyone took a bath.
Yeah.
You know, we read books, we played a dinosaur game. I put them both to bed, and I'm thinking, this is what I wanted. This is calmness in my life.
Yep.
This is predictability. Yes. And, you know, small children thrive on that, where they know what to expect. And so I'm like, this is why I did what I did.
Good.
So there is something through the court system where you can have them blow into a breathalyzer before coming to pick up the kids.
Yeah.
And I'll be implementing that, because, you know,
now that he's relapsed,
I said no. And it's hard, because you kind of sometimes think, I'll still sometimes have like direct conversations with him, like, what are you thinking? You really want this to be your life? You know?
I know.
And
it's
back to what our other guest said. Like, this is a disease. Like, you think you can help switch it for them, but you can't. Like, this is all them. There's something going on in their brain. They have to fix it. I can't fix it. But sometimes I really stop and think, like, you really think about what you're doing.
Right.
And now all you can do is set these boundaries. You're not going to be around the kids when you're drinking.
Right.
And then they're going to be with their kids less because of that. And they're going to have to make the decision on their own to get the help.
On that topic, totally not to cut you off, what would you tell parents? What would you tell parents? I don't want to dedicate this whole segment to like man bashing. So it could be the wife.
Yes.
And it totally has been.
And it's really common for a lot of women that I've met their husbands say, the women couldn't take it anymore.
I don't blame them.
It's hard.
There's actually an amazing documentary about Elizabeth Vargas.
Okay. What's it on?
Netflix? She's like, I'm not sure what station it's on. We watched it at one of the rehab family days.
Oh, boy. Okay.
But she was like a famous, you know, all put together reporter, and was dealing with alcoholism. Just started with wine, like wine after work, going for a glass of white wine. That turned into three. That turned into wine in water bottles between segments, into, you know, like blacking out. And she says in the in this documentary, she says, I would have killed for my children, but I couldn't stop drinking.
Right.
It's so crazy.
And her husband left. Her husband was the guy that sings Walking in Memphis. He's a famous singer.
Okay. Yep.
He left. I mean, she lost everything. She said, I was on my knees.
Okay. Yep. So
that's a woman. I mean, that's a very powerful documentary, but it does a good job explaining alcoholism.
Okay.
And how somebody who was completely put together, how it progressed.
So right. What is this called?
It's Elizabeth Vargas.
Elizabeth Vargas.
I'll find it and put a link on our website for that. That would be great.
So this being said,
I had another question as well.
Okay. So my question was, what would you say to people? I lost it.
Keep going. Thinking.
You ask. I'll think
okay.
Of it.
So we heard where Betty's at. Where are you right now? So, Angelica. Angelina. Okay, so you told me before the show when we were talking that your husband is actually taking a medication that helps with the alcoholism. And
it makes him throw up, right? I've heard of that.
Hey, so, you just jumped right in there. You're sorry. Dumbass.
Sorry. Because I've heard of that. Josh used to.
So I want to know what that is. And
he used to tell me about that.
How you got to that point.
So where, you know, I don't know what the outcome of this is going to be, to tell you the truth. I know what my boundaries are in this situation, which is no drinking around our
and you're
family.
Living in it right now. You guys are thriving. You set your boundaries, and he's doing what to help this situation?
He's working the program, as they call it, which is AA every day, working with a sponsor, working through the steps, meditate daily meditations, and just like really dedicating his life right now to being sober. Like it's really, that's his priority.
Okay.
And I've had to like just accept that and keep myself nurtured and happy. So there's this medicine called Antabuse, which was recommended by his treatment center, which is a pill that you just take it, nothing happens, but if you drink, you get like really sick. Violently sick. So it's just kind of a buffer for like if he's ever. I mean, ideally, you want to deal with like the real issues behind the drinking, and like real, you know. But it has just, it's a good buffer because if he's even thinking about it, you think, oh, I'm just going to go to the store. I mean, you're going to get violently sick.
Okay.
So it helps. And then for me, it honestly does give me a peace of mind.
Right.
Like when he's going to pick up our daughter and stuff.
Right.
Because if he's calling me and he sounds good and fine, then I know he's really fine.
Right.
It's not like I don't have to listen to the intonations in his voice. And
mm-hmm.
I know like either he's going to be really sick or not. So for us, he was willing to take it, and it's like our morning ritual. We actually we do like a little serenity prayer together.
I love that.
He takes his Antabuse, and I go to work.
That's freaking amazing, though.
This is like I think that's cute.
This is our new morning, and like honestly, where I mean, right now it's everything's great, and we're taking one day at a time.
That's key.
And we're both committed to recovery. I'm committed to myself and nurturing myself.
So he's working the steps, doing AA. You're doing Al-Anon. Is there anything else that you're doing on top of that? Like, do you guys do therapy?
We do couples therapy with an addiction specialist.
That's awesome.
Who's also a marriage therapist.
Okay. Ooh, I like that.
Is that covered under your insurance by any chance?
No, not my new insurance.
Okay.
So we're paying out of pocket, but I mean, this is just too important.
Right.
Like, especially because we're expecting this.
Is it in the city you live in? You don't have to say it, but is it close to you?
Yeah, it's in the next town over. Okay. But yeah, you know, it's $100 a week, but honestly.
Oh, that's nothing.
The investment,
Yeah, I went to premarital counseling, and that bitch is now up to like $250.
Damn.
She's amazing. She's amazing. I give her to everybody, but Jesus.
Yes. Because the thing that this guy does, and I do recommend finding somebody, if you're going to a marriage counselor, that they have the experience. This guy himself was an alcoholic.
Right.
He worked at the rehab center my husband went to. And because he's dealing with us as a couple, but he's calling him out on his shit. Like, as we're in the meetings.
Right, that's great.
And my husband says something. He's like, that's totally alcoholic
behavior.
That's
why I liked ours, too.
And so I, like, then during the week, I just, like, kind of save. If I have something to bring up, I kind of save it for therapy. And
that's great.
So, and we're able to, like, really talk about how addiction does affect your marriage.
Right,
and alcoholism. And And unfortunately, the truth of it is, you know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. They really? Can be sober. You can be sober 10 years.
Oh, you can be sober 10 years,
but you're just.
It is a forever label.
So once you are married to an alcoholic, you're married to an alcoholic. And if you stay married, you're making that decision.
Right.
And it is a commitment. And it's let me preface, before I met my husband, I didn't know any alcohol. I didn't grow up with alcoholics in my family, nothing. So this was a real rude awakening into, oh shit, what did I do? Honestly, what is this disease? This is gnarly. And I really had to grapple last year with, this is something I'm willing to stick with, stick with in my marriage. And at this point, you know, one day at a time, I'm in it, and it's, there's enough good to, but it's a commitment. But you know, everyone's going to deal with this at different levels. And what I would say is, if you're earlier on, you know, you haven't gotten to the point that Betty and I are at, where they need rehab and they're like, you know, day drinking, ruining events, and they're just kind of like, you think you see signs of it. I would just, one, like, learn about it, try to get as much information as you can, and then approach them as calmly as you can when they're sober. Do not have a conversation with a drunk person, because it is completely pointless. When they're sober, approach them and, you know, let them know what you're seeing, and but put it on them to make the decisions for and then set your boundaries. You know, I've noticed you've really been drinking excessively. Like, when you're doing that, I'm going to leave the house and, like, take our daughter.
But you need to stick to it, though, right?
And you have to be consistent. You have to be, And,
same with children, you know?
And, you know, the thought is, if they're drinking, you, like, almost want to stay there because you want to, like, babysit them. Right. No,
yeah,
like,
don't do that.
You set that boundary. That makes sense. And then when once they start seeing those boundaries, then they hopefully will react and get it under control. Yeah. And some people can stop cold turkey.
Yeah, I'm some people can. There's been some incredible stories where people just stop. They have an epiphany.
Yeah.
Their rock bottoms are so different. Whereas some people, they end up in jail because they killed someone on the road. And and that might not even be their rock bottom, which is crazy.
And somebody else, it could just be a bad hangover. Yeah. And then they're like, forget it, I don't need to drink.
Yeah.
Or, you know what, they really can. They might have an issue with drinking, but, like, they can kind of manage
it. So a functioning alcoholic.
Well, that's an interesting term. That's still alcoholism, right?
Yeah, but if you're truly an alcoholic, you can't have just a few drinks. But there may be a spectrum in there where the person really is not an alcoholic.
Yeah, they call it abuse and dependence. And we actually put
alcoholism and alcoholic.
Well, no.
They said there was a difference on the link that we were reading.
Yeah, abuse versus dependence is two very different things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Let me ask you this. We did have one of our listeners, she had a question, and I wanted to get your guys' reaction on this. And see if we're good on time. Are we good on time? Are you late?
I'm not, yeah.
Oh, go. We can leave. Okay. Yeah. We got to actually leave. But they asked if 15 beers a night is too much.
Oh, yes.
Yes, duh. I would say so. Yeah, I mean, if they're, and again, it's...
Thank you so much, Betty, for sharing the story. If anybody has any questions for Betty and her her experience, please...
Comment,
DM, goodbye. Reach out to us. She's Betty. An incredible woman.
Yes, bye, and Betty. We will Thank ask. You.
So again, so 15 beers, I mean, means things for different people, depending on how big they are. But the idea is, if they, like, need it to, like, go to sleep, like, they can't just, they, like, think about it.
I mean, that's more than a 12-pack a night. I mean, how much money are you, like?
That's clearly a lot of booze.
Yeah.
And then when the tolerance starts going up like that.
Correct, yeah.
Where they don't get drunk on 6 beers anymore, now they need 15. Right. Your body is developing, like, a major.
A dependence.
A chemical
that's
dependence.
A dependence. Yes.
So, I mean, and then, like, if they're prioritizing that over spending time with you,
there
being
it is
intimate.
Yep. Yeah,
they can't even have
prioritize.
A conversation, and they're just like
they're not helping with the kids.
I mean, that's and so.
But again, that's, you know, something you guys have to talk with in your family. But that's a red flag.
And then
I would think that's a red flag.
And what would probably work is saying, if you're going to drink like this at night, you know, I'm going in the room. I'm going to read a book. I'm going to go out with my friends. I'm not going to be around for it.
Right.
And but what about if you have children? Women don't have that luxury. I know it's
the
hard.
The children make it a little complicated, but even then you can get creative.
Yep.
And just say, you know, I'm putting them, if you're, you can say, you know, if you are this drunk, I'm going to put her to bed. I prefer you not to do it. And hopefully they react.
But don't you think that's enabling?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to do the work for you, and they know it, and that's why they're able to sit there and get drunk?
You're, like, protecting your kid from, like, being around their drunk parent. So
I like the leaving aspect. It's like, you get that drunk, then we're not going to stay here.
But I can't imagine myself leaving my
spouse. It's easier said than done.
No, but I mean even like just going in the other room.
Right.
And then like, yeah, like with the kid though.
But yeah, but I'm just shutting yourself off.
I don't think the husband would care, right? He'd be like, sweet, I'm going to watch my dumb documentary.
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting, because every household dynamic is going to be so different. And so you have to, what I've learned from you, Angelina, right? Mm-hmm. what I've learned from you is that you have to figure out what your boundaries are. What kind of lifestyle do you want to live? You assess your life. If this is something that you feel in your gut is not setting right, like, I don't deserve to live like this, you're going to take those
like
baby
Betty
steps to make those changes, set those boundaries. You'll start pulling away, stop controlling the situation, go get the help you need to become strong to face what the next outcome might be.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And so I have accepted that I'm married to an alcoholic. I'm willing to live a certain way and be aware of it, because I do have to nurture him and certain things. I'm willing to be married to a sober alcoholic, a recovering alcoholic, I should say. There may be relapses in the future. It depends at that time, you know.
What it is, right?
How it's really the effort put forth, you know, to working the program. But what I can say is, being in Al-Anon and focusing on myself, that if that were to happen and I need to make a decision, I'm going to be able to make it calmly and like sanely.
Okay. I like that.
And
like
not that. Like running around town looking for him like a maniac.
Right, right.
So I just feel much more in control of myself and like lucid.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I truly don't wish this situation on my worst enemy. It's pretty intense. But thank God for friends and neighbors and everyone. You just kind of find the silver lining. Mm-hmm. And I will say, the silver lining for us has been, because we're in recovery and therapy and reading, we really have become so much closer.
Yeah.
And he's been dealing with emotional issues from childhood and different things that otherwise we, you know, some couples go forever married and not deal with
stuff like
and
that about stuff. Each other.
So we're really actually stronger than ever.
That's awesome.
In this situation, and our marriage is like evolving. So, you know, the good outcome could be he's sober for the next 25 years and it's a happy ending.
Great.
But either way, you know, I will be standing on my feet. And so that's it. And so I think early on, if you're able to approach it calmly and soundly and get yourself support, that will give your relationship the best outcome.
So it's really great.
So I want to ask you one question before we go. And then I wanted to say something. I really liked that you added that about the therapist, because Brian and I never dated. And so we went to premarital counseling because never dating and then, you know, getting engaged just because we were friends for so long. Mm. You're butted heads, but everything is supposed to be done this way. This is supposed to be done this way.
Right.
But the reason I feel like why therapy was successful was because you do need that person to say, it's not your turn.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Be quiet. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's not speaking because you talk over him. And then for vice versa, to be like, it's not your turn. You know what I mean? You do need someone not to just let you talk. You do need a mediator, which was great. And it's very successful. And I like that you found that. And then second of all, I want to know if his family was supportive and what happens when you see that they're the enabler. Mm-hmm. And that's why they've raised him like some type of a man child, you know, because that's one of my friend's situations.
Yeah, his family was definitely a big source for the issues to get as worse bad as they did.
Okay.
So I think the alcoholism was genetically predisposed because his biological father was a huge addict. So that probably got passed down genetically.
Oh, this is important.
But then his family and his stepdad and them not addressing the issues and him drinking heavily as a teenager and like ever giving him an outlet for dealing with these emotional issues and him just feeling more and more isolated and just having a pretty crappy childhood and teen.
Okay.
It just made it worse. And you know, maybe he could have nipped this in the bud earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I met him in his late 30s, he had never even like talked to anybody about his feelings.
So would you allow that? So what I'm seeing is someone say, Amanda, they don't know any better. This was their life. It's all they know. So what do you say to that?
That's correct. So in the beginning, I did say that a lot. Like, oh, I feel so bad for him. He had such a crappy life. But now we're going to have a really good life and he's going to be fine.
Okay.
And
ooh, now I remember what I was gonna
say. Didn't completely change things.
So what do you say to parents when they say, they're devastated because they're saying, how come I wasn't enough and my kid wasn't enough for, mm-hmm. for him to make that change?
Mm-hmm.
Because they, this is, a, it's a, in the brain, it's a chemical dependency.
So it has nothing to do with you or the child.
It is a disease. It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with how much they love you. Mm-hmm. Like I said, that Elizabeth Vargas thing, she said, I would die for my kids, but I can't stop drinking. Crazy. And the more that you learn about alcoholism and like, it actually changes pathways in your brain. Okay. So as part of sobriety, you need to give your brain time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's crazy. Like you're, it's such a chemical dependency. It's right. gnarly. I never knew that.
But on that point, though, I do want our listeners to know, though, just like how you're practicing and how Betty practiced, if this is not the life you want to live, though,
right.
do not make an excuse for the alcoholic. Yes. That is so important because Betty was like, no, you have traumatized me so much. I'm out. I can't do this yes. anymore. I'm out. And that's okay for her to choose that. You are, you guys are working the steps and it's amazing and there's some great outcomes and that's great as well. But it's, you have to really look at that. It's, is this the life that you want to live? And right, I think that's right. really important for anyone who's dealing with an alcoholic.
Right. And right. they could be, my husband is made of gold. Like I still mm-hmm. do not doubt his like integrity, mm-hmm. his loyalty. I mean, mm-hmm. he is made of gold. He is not some, you know, deadbeat, mm-hmm. whatever. But you know, so that, and that has kept me in this, you know, mm-hmm. and that does keep me going. But if, you know, if the alcoholism were to win in this case and he stopped working his program, then, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's
you
just
that,
then the lifestyle will just not be for me. But
what about abuse? And when women say, because, you know, I've had friends when they say, when they're verbally abusive or, you know, the rest emotionally and all the above, mm-hmm. it's not him. It's only the alcohol.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's obviously unacceptable. So
I like to hear that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no. I mean, that I definitely dealt with some verbal abuse in the alcoholism because they are filled with so much shame and guilt
uh-huh.
that they turn it around on you and will be hypercritical of you.
Right, right.
So because you're so critical of them for the right. drinking and they're so shameful.
Right, right, right.
So
they have to turn
they
it
actually
around.
Can become mean.
Okay.
But fortunately, neither of us had to deal with any physical,
right.
you know, abuse.
But
the verbal obviously is horrible. And so again, if they don't, so when they, and then when they do deal with the drinking and they are sober, then they also have to deal with all the underlying stuff. And mm-hmm. that's part of the 12 right. steps in AA. Because you can be something called a dry drunk, which is where you're sober, but you still have like alcoholic tendencies mm-hmm. and like are mean.
Interesting.
You're basically mean and you're just like white knuckling it, like trying not to drink.
Like your withdrawals type mm-hmm. period.
Yeah, like you're kind of mean, you're angry, you're resentful.
Right, right.
Because you're not dealing with like the real issues.
Very interesting. Such an interesting topic.
Yeah. Seek support, seek information, try not to be in denial as hard as that is.
Right. Right.
I mean,
and really take a look at yourself and what you want in your life. What are you getting? What are you not getting? And then from there, hopefully seek the help to answer those questions because no one, even the alcoholic, no one deserves to live that type of a life. We want the alcoholic to live the life they deserve as well. So hopefully they'll get to that point to seek the help with this, with your support. But if not,
remove yourself.
You need
and
to
give
remove
them,
yourself and
give them that space
and protect
to make
your children.
Decision, right?
As,
yes,
as
first.
Betty did. Betty
yes.
protected her children.
She's I
like,
agree with that.
Let,
there's a lot of women yeah. that are afraid to leave because, like, what would I do? But your job is to protect that child because the other parent is incapable of doing
right.
that job, and all they have left is you. Mm-hmm. You have to make that decision.
Yeah,
yeah, and like regret and denial, like, why did I marry this person? Why did I have kids?
Don't worry about that.
It
right
and,
now.
And beating yourself up,
right.
it that also gets you nowhere. You just have to say, this is my situation.
Yes.
I could handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is nothing you can't overcome. Everyone has something going on.
Yes.
And you just seek strength and then find the silver lining. So that's really
I love it.
Forward.
You answered all my questions. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's going to really help so many people. And again, if anybody has any questions for our guests about their situation or where to seek help or even referrals for therapists and things like that,
yes.
know that you're not alone. DM us. It could be private message on Facebook. So then it could actually be public as well if you want. So we can help other people who are too afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Sounds
yeah.
good.
Thank you so
back
much.
Thank
back
you so
work.
Much.
Thank
I got to go
you.
Pick up my
Thanks,
kids.
Guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much. That was so good.
That was so good. So good. Oh, the stories were so